So with that, I am going to press the button on the phone patch machine. I'm going to hang up the telephone. I am going to say hello, Lynn Sorensen.
Hello, Phil.
Oh, I always wonder if the person that I'm hoping will say hello, Phil, will actually say hello, Phil, and you have. Lynn Sorensen, BSN, that stands for Bachelor of Science in Nursing, RN, that stands for Registered Nurse. She has a long career in the field of health. If I were to summarize it all, we would be done with our conversation, so I won't. I will tell you, she's a woman of the Northwest and graduated from Evergreen State College. That's important, I think. And the University of Washington School of Nursing, she is a member of KPTC's COVID Watch team, and we're going to talk about medical things, right?
Yes, in part.
In part. Ooh, I wonder what else we'll hear about. Well, she chuckles, too. Well, now, you sent me a list of things that you thought you would like to talk about, and I'm sure they will elicit questions because that's how it works around here. But let's talk, talk about what you suggested. Let's begin with this. How are we doing? How are we doing in this county right now?
I think we're doing very well. And I'm involved with listening to the daily Emergency Operations Center briefings. And those are at 1 o'clock every day. So today, Barney Burke is listening to that and will write up a report. But I think overall we're doing very well, but it's not a time to let down your guard. Still maintain the distance and the mask and the hand washing and keep it up because this is not a time to let it go.
I think that is a risk, isn't it, that people will see these, I think, relatively low numbers, 28 positive cases, only 12 tests that have not come back yet. It looks like there's really not much going on, but we know that's an illusion.
Yes, it is. And Dr. Tom Locke has said a number of times, he estimates it's 5 to 10 times, there are 5 to 10 times more COVID cases in the county. It's just that we've had such limited testing.
Nevertheless, limited testing for sure, but 659 people have been tested, 619 negatives, 4.3% positive. So even though testing is a bit slow, and I think the hospital, I'll say Jefferson Healthcare, has to be judicious about whom they test, still, they're testing quite a few people, and very fortunately, very few of the ones they test do come back positive. I don't think that there's,
correct,
the last I heard, there are no COVID patients in the hospital at this point, although there may be patients from this county sent to Kitsap County. That has happened. I don't know how often.
I'm not aware of that. But again, lack of widespread testing has kind of been the crux of the whole, but I'd say, mismanaged pandemic response in the United States. But I think it's in the future, not too far off future, is that we will have a commercial COVID-19 antibody test. And that is the data that will reflect how many people have actually been infected during this first wave of COVID-19. And more importantly, if those who are infected have the immunity to the COVID-19. So that's yet to be determined, but that's generally the case. If you've had the one strain of the virus, you have developed an immunity to it, and that would really help the whole population when this comes around again, which it probably will do in the fall.
And you would like to have that antibody test, wouldn't you?
I would, because I believe I had the COVID-19 infection and or disease, and I'm looking forward to finding out if my weird symptoms that lasted, really, it took me almost 2 weeks to come back to feeling like myself, but my symptoms were very, very different from what they're calling the classic cough, high fever, and shortness of breath. So I think the range of symptoms from no symptoms whatsoever to near death and those that die from it is just incredibly broad. Some people lose their sense of smell and taste. Others are deathly sick. So it's hard to tell who has it and who doesn't. And so I think a widespread test for the antibodies would be very important for all the data to be collected and researched.
You said something about planning for the pandemic. I'm going to interview a gentleman, Bernard After Buffalo, later on. He referred to it, I don't know whether he said a plandemic or a bad plandemic, but at any rate, yeah, that's what he was thinking. And at 3:15, we'll ask Bernard what he really had in mind when he said that. So you wanted to talk about a glossary of terms, and I think it's a really a good idea, getting our vocabulary organized. If we don't have our vocabulary together, we really can't have a very good conversation. So first question that I will ask you based upon what you gave to me, how do viruses differ from bacteria?
Well, they're very different. For one thing, bacteria can be killed by antibiotics, but viruses can't and won't. Viruses are not really alive. They need a host to exist. And so they're a completely different animal. I didn't do my research so much on these glossary questions, but that's the gist of it. So, again, people that get a cold, that's usually a viral infection, and they will want to take antibiotics for it, but that's not the solution. So that's a very general statement. But do you have another question for me?
Well, actually, I will. What kills a virus? I know that antibiotics kill bacteria, but I wonder what in the world can do the same for a virus?
There are antiviral medications that, such as like for HIV, there's medications that can kill that virus and help you with the symptoms of that. But they won't have, there's no medications at this time for the COVID-19 or the novel coronavirus. Even though certain things have been touted as possibly to help with the infection, it's not based on science yet. And I'm afraid that the current administration in Washington has been touting different drugs, and that is not the way to go because people will mismanage those and maybe take more than recommended or think that they are cured. There's no cure for this. We may get a vaccine in the next maybe 2 years to help prevent you getting sick from it. But it's very important to know that there's no medication at this time that will kill this virus.
Despite what our presidential snake oil salesman says.
Yes.
So what is a vaccine? These are questions from you. I hope you did some research on this one. What is a vaccine and how do they work? And how are vaccines developed and why does it take so long?
Well, it takes so long because there's a lot of testing that has to be done. And some vaccines are what are considered live vaccines. And others are what are called attenuated, meaning they have killed the vaccine, but it still appears to the body as an invader that's similar enough to the vaccine. And we'll get the body's response to it and kill it before it becomes dangerous to the body. If that makes sense to you.
It does indeed make sense.
It's a very long process to get it right and to make sure that it won't hurt anybody when they get it. Some people do react to vaccines, but in general, vaccines are considered very safe and necessary to help the whole population.
And some people react physically to vaccines, there are people who react intellectually and emotionally to the whole notion of vaccination. And I would imagine when there is, and I surely hope myself that there will be a vaccine for this coronavirus, I would imagine there will be controversy around it as well.
There could be. They're predicting that it may possibly come around as a seasonal COVID-19, like we get seasonal flus, and the research is done a year in advance to create the vaccine for what the researchers feel will be the most virulent flu to come around in the fall. So the vaccines are not available usually until the fall, and they go they're given throughout the year until June 30th, and that's the end of when they will be giving a annual flu vaccine. And so once the vaccine is created for the COVID-19 disease, that too, I imagine, would be similar in being available in the fall and recommended to be getting that early on. But it still can be given throughout the year until June 30th. It's very specific to certain kinds of viral strains, and I think it's a great way of helping people get through the seasons. Those that say they get sick from the from the vaccines, for say flu vaccine, they may have been exposed weeks before to it, or because it does take about 2 weeks for your body to develop the ability to fight off a flu virus when it is shown to invade the body. So, you know, it may be coincidental. It may be a reaction to something in the vaccine, yes, but there's no way you actually get the influenza from the influenza vaccine.
So quite often the questions I ask here on the show, I pretty much know the answers to because I've already done some research myself, but this is a question. It's a very basic question. I realize I should know the answer to this question, but I do not. Is influenza a virus?
Yes.
Okay. So we could maybe expect that a coronavirus will have some characteristics in common, or maybe we can cross our fingers and hope that it has some characteristics in common, especially the seasonality with influenza.
Well, it does. It is similar. It's similar to SARS. And in fact, the actual virus's name that creates the disease of COVID-19. Let's see if I can, I don't have this written down, but it's SARS coronavirus, I think 2 is the number they've assigned to it. So the SARS stands for severe. I can't think of the, but anyway, it's a severe acute respiratory illness.
Oh, you knew it all along.
Yeah, I knew it all along, but I couldn't spit it out. Again, it is similar enough to viruses that have been on Earth before, and that's how they're projecting out, you know, what they think will be happening with this. But again, it is a novel coronavirus, so they can only base the information on what they've seen thus far and also from what they've seen in the past from this similar kind of virus.
You know, lacking a vaccine, I find myself asking myself at age 73, how will I behave when the virus seems to be generally subdued, but probably not entirely absent in our population? Am I going to maybe go to where I often go after the show, but haven't lately, the poorhouse, only when it's not crowded? Will I never go out at all until there's a vaccine? Is it a matter of risking the possibility that I get it when I'm pretty confident the emergency room isn't crazy and there may be a respirator for me? Or am I going to, what would we say, not self-medicate, though I suppose I could do that. No, am I going to self-isolate for the remainder of my days? And I think this is a question maybe other people are asking, but I know I ask it of myself. Just come July, come August, when we think that there isn't much of this coronavirus around, am I going to take a chance or am I just going to hang out in Jimicum and play it safe? I don't know what other people are thinking. I will say before I get to my next question with you, that I think is a question I will ask people to respond to on the air in, I guess a few hours, not until later in the show, but I would like to know what other people are thinking about that, because one of the things we'd like to think we can reduce our risk level to zero in all manner, all walks of our lives. And I bicycled from Chimicum along the shoulder of Rhodey Drive. Some people think that's very risky behavior. I don't, there's a question for you, Lynn. What do you think about that? Are we going to have to accept some risk, especially before a vaccine is developed?
Yes, because we all live with risk every day. But hopefully people will learn to wash their hands and on a regular basis, keep that up, cover their cough, and maintain maybe a little more distance. I hope people will just walk around in masks for the rest of their lives. But it's a real learning curve to think about the potential of infections in the whole broad sense of it, not just for this virus itself. So maybe there's a worldwide learning, or maybe just Jefferson County learning about, you know, the importance of washing your hands and but still going out in public. I can't see, I mean, I'm not going to not go out if I'm immune or not. I'm still going to go about my life, as, you know, but under the direction of whatever the health mandate is or continues to be. But I would say we all live with risk, and this is not particularly, I mean, this is novel, yes, and a pandemic, yes, but the earth has lived with many infections in the past, and we've gotten through it, come out the other side. I kind of see this as when the plague days were medieval times, and then the Renaissance came about. There may be some good things that come out of this, and I am a positive thinker. So I'm hoping people will just take this to heart and learn a few things, and we can learn from this experience and all the ways that we're innovating to still continue with our lives through it.
Lynn, do you drink beer?
Yes, I do. Occasionally.
Oh, wonderful! I will. When we both feel safe going out into the world, I will buy you a beer at the tap room of your choosing.
Like the courthouse.
That's where I would. That was my first thought. So you and Emmylou and I, you have not met her anyway. We can have a beer together at the poorhouse. Another question that you would like me to talk to you about, and I will read from pretty much what you sent to me. The new research and trials of using COVID-19 antibodies found in recovered people to infuse those who are very sick. Has that been tested? Is it likely to be successful? And on whom would it be used?
I think it's kind of considered kind of a last-ditch effort, but I think that it probably is going to be a therapy that could be helpful with the people in, say, in New York that are, they don't have enough ventilators to keep people alive on. They may ask the patient if they're, or their family, if they're not able to answer, if they want to try getting the antibodies from somebody who actually got through the disease. Maybe they'd been just as sick as this person is now and managed to get through. So again, it's very experimental, but it makes sense to me that it might work. And I don't have any particulars about it. I just know that I've read that this is a possibility, and I'm hopeful that it could work.
And we don't know at this point whether it's available in Washington, Jefferson County, anywhere nearby?
Oh, I would doubt it. Okay. I would bet it's in the biggest research hospitals or still in the labs. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. The number 20%, Dr. Tom Locke talked about this on Monday when he talked to the county commissioners. I've read it many, many times. 20%, mm-hmm. Thinking is that 20% of the people who actually have COVID-19 show no symptoms. They're out and about among us. My question is, where does that number come from? And how reliable is it?
I really don't know. I think it's a guess. I mean, this, like I said, these things are based on maybe how virus has worked in the past. But like I said earlier, the symptoms are from nothing to everything. And I don't have an answer for where he pulled that from, but it must be the public health thinking, because they all talk to each other, and that's a good enough guess. And it must be based on some of their data.
I'm wondering if maybe what it's based on is testing done in other countries, probably Asia, perhaps China, maybe more likely South Korea.
But yeah, South Korea, definitely. They were very much ahead of this, and they were testing people like 30,000 a day or something. So they may have that data. You're right.
Well, Lynn Sorensen, let's see, is there anything else? Oh, I know what you selected. As you have done in the past, you selected a closing theme for Through Health to Science. Good heavens, Lynn. Through Science to Health. I made up the name and I can't remember it. Through Science to Health. And what you want me to play, we're hearing a great deal of John Prine's wonderful music these days. And the one you chose, I didn't ask you to choose a John Prine song, but you did. Spanish Pipe Dream. Why do you like this? Why is this important to you? What does it bring back to you, perhaps?
Well, I just like where he says it's time to blow up your TV and move to the country and build a place and put a garden in, because I think that's very good thinking. And I think the incessant flow of news from every medium it's just not conducive to health. And I don't have a TV, and I limit my radio news severely. But of course, I listen to the KPTZ news programs. But I just can't take it all in all the time. I'll read things online, but I don't want to hear them necessarily, because it is very hard on the mind. And so this is a good song to reflect that.
So I'm socially distancing myself also from the news. My favorite line in Spanish Pipe Dream, by the way, is not exactly to the point of blowing up televisions. It is something like, I knew that topless lady had something up her sleeve. And I thank you, Lynn Sorensen, for the conversation Through Science to Health. Lynn Sorensen, RN, BSN. We will talk to you again Through Science to Health 2 weeks from today. Next week, Kathleen Keenan. And thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.